Blog Talk Radio.
Sorry about that, y'all. I hit the wrong button. We're going to go ahead and pour libations anyway.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears. Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs. Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos. Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
O.
Ashe, O. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We began the UAC in July of 2013, and every Sunday we invite you to participate in our weekly conference calls. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220-981-POUND. Again, the number for our weekly conference calls, and we invite you to reach out to us, tell us what you think about Sign of the Times. Is there anything that the UAC can do to support what you may be doing in your respective cities and communities? Please call in 6:30 every Sunday, Eastern Standard Time. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220-981-POUND. We also want to thank our sponsors. Today being Tuesday, we have one of our sponsors live and on the air with us every Tuesday. Dr. James Jones from Manhood, Race, and Culture. You can reach out and Manhood, Race, and Culture on both a like page and group page, as well as on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. You also can reach our other sponsor, Arlie Gordon, on Facebook as well from Unity Design. And Unity is spelled UNITEE design.com. Please reach out to him. Check out his wares, especially considering he is the conscious-minded nature, and all of his designs and clothing represent that. So please reach out to Arlie Gordon at unitydesign.com. And Unity, again, is spelled UNITEEDesign.com. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, thank you for coming. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Ashe, glad to have you. So I guess Brother Mike will be joining us later, and as well as Brother Starboy. I know Brother Starboy is just now getting off work, but he has promoted the broadcast on Facebook, so hopefully they'll be coming in a little bit later. So Dr. Jones, we talked about, formulating 90-day initiatives back at the end of last year, the end of 2014. Recognizing the fact that we don't want to remain stagnated, and the conversations that we're having on Sign of the Times and the work that we're doing through the UAC, we want to be able to gauge any progress that we make, even if it's only small steps. So one of the things that we recognized is the need to increase on a comprehensive level the literacy in our community. So as you well know, and others who listen to Sign of the Times on a regular basis, 90 days until September 19th of 2015, we're calling these our 90 days of literacy. And so tonight and the rest of this week, we're going to be concentrating on dialectical materialism. Yes, that's a big word, and some of us know what it means, some of us are learning what it means, and some of us are kind of good at explaining what it means. So I'm going to yield to you, because you are the doctor, talk about the definition of dialectical materialism and maybe give us an example of how it's been used in the past.
Okay. The idea of dialectical materialism, I think that with any big word, a lot of people become kind of intimidated by it, but it's actually not a very difficult concept to understand. But let's start off actually with a official definition of what it is. Dialectical materialism is, the definition is, the Marxist theory that political and historical events result from the conflict of social forces and are interpretable as a series of contradictions in their solutions. The conflict is believed to be caused by material needs. One of the things that whenever you're dealing with these types of quote-unquote weighty concepts and topics, one of the most important things to do is to be able to contextualize it within an understandable framework. And this is a Marxian term. And Marx, of course, we're talking about Karl Marx. And Marx is talking about a people that were not black. He's talking about a situation that was not urban America. And so I think that for reasons of being productive, I think that we need to talk about it in the context of black folk. And so in with that, the spirit of that, I think that I would like to utilize another social theorist who was at times in his life a Marxist, we can comfortably say, but he advanced the black struggle in a major way. And that individual I'm talking about is Huey P. Newton. And the way Huey P. Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, started October 15, 1966, the way Newton dealt with the concept, and let me say this about Huey. Huey is probably one of the most misunderstood figures in the history of activism. People have an idea of what the Panthers are, and they have an idea of what Huey should have been. And in actuality, Huey P. Newton is nothing close to what they wish he would be. Huey's not a rabble-rousing, revolutionary. Huey is actually a very cerebral individual who spent so much time studying Engels, Marx, Mao, Che Guevara, Fidel Castro. He's a theorist of sorts, and that was one of the problems, and that's a different topic, that the Panthers had, that when Huey came out of prison, what the people expected and desired and wanted, Huey couldn't give it to them because they had created this caricature of who he should be, and he was not that person. But when Huey talks about dialectical materialism, in many ways it boils down to basically this: the ability for oppressed people to be able to look at the situation of what has occurred to them, the historical events and what have you, the social occurrences, and to go one step further beyond just knowing and reporting and observing what it is that has occurred to their people and why they are in the sad state that they are, but also take a gander and a look about them to understand what are the tools that they have at their disposal to, in many ways, counterattack, counterbalance the damage and the horrific attacks that they have experienced. In this case, we're talking about African Americans. So to put it simply, what Huey was considering is quite simply noting what is happening to black people. What were the historical antecedents, precedents for it, and understanding the damage that was done, and that damage could be political, social, economic. It runs the gamut. But at the exact same time that we get a very good understanding of what has occurred to us, Huey was also steadfast about looking up about what we can do to counterattack it, so that we don't just take the position of being victims and agency-less beings that can do little to nothing about the current predicament that they find themselves in. So that would be a workable understanding of dialectical materialism and what we're talking about tonight. And I yield with that, Queen.
Ashay. So to, briefly go over what you just said, to Africanize, if you will, the concept of dialectical materialism, it has been mostly used and developed and created by socialists, like you mentioned, Marx, Lenin, Mao, Tsé-Tung, and others, but it's one thing for us to take, I guess, the message, if you will, of dialectical materialism. It's another thing for us to Africanize it, and it's another thing for us to look at our specific issues that are based on us and doing something about it. And would you say that wraps it up in a nutshell?
Most definitely. The thing that we have to recognize is that no one else has historically lived like Americans have lived. America is a place where what is the normal hierarchy of needs, wants, and desires is peculiar, to say the least. It's a place where material need and want has been trumped by race. That race has a phenomenal, unprecedented impact upon the population of individuals. For instance, when you look at who has more in common, a poor white boy who attends school at some rundown inner city school, a poor black boy who attends the exact same school, or a black boy whose parents have gone to Harvard and Princeton, and, you know, he's third, fourth generation professional. Historically, in most lands, it would be quite simply the poor people, and that would highlight the class aspect of Marxism and the class aspect of just human survival, to be honest with you. When you throw in the idea of Africanizing, the idea of dialectical materialism, really all you're doing is utilizing the method, the Marxian term, the Marxian concept of dialectical materialism, and making it applicable to persons of African descent. You know, it's mm-hmm. a structure, you're right, it's a structure and a framework that we can utilize to analyze any people's problems. And I yield with that.
So we could take anything from what I'm understanding, and whether it's a small problem, like in our household or in our family or whatever, or if it's a communal problem or a citywide problem, but we have to, I guess, first start by, you know, doing, I guess, the dirty work, if you will, of analyzing exactly what the need or the problem is. And so I guess that's kind of where we often get stuck at, Dr. Jones. We never, we have a tendency to not move past what the problem is and get to the point where we really start to formulate solutions. Why do you think that that's been such a challenge for us?
You know, the thing is that our people have, for so long, been in this mode of we're constantly under attack. And it's almost as if with every wave of attack that comes in, we're documenting and documenting and documenting. And I believe that we've forgotten that next step, which is finding and implementing a solution. I think that when you get dominated and you don't see that your people are able to defend themselves in any serious, significant manner, that you get almost in a loop and you begin to consistently talk about the idea of what the problem is and what has occurred, and your mind is kind of stuck there. And in many ways, I call such individuals idolaters, because whether they want to realize it or not, they've taken the agency away from themselves and their people, and they placed it all in the cachet of the oppressor. And in many ways made the oppressor feel as if, and they talk about the oppressor as if they're gods. So I think mm-hmm. that it's a natural adaptation of an unnatural adaptation of a oppressed and dominated people. So that's what I believe has been going on for far too long.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can, have the listeners listen to this story of how, you know, unknowingly we were forced into a situation to use dialectical materialism in an urban environment when they closed our street off last summer. And we're looking at, you know, us as residents, as low-income people, as those who, you know, have limitations and physical disabilities and all that kind of stuff, we're kind of lumped in this group of that's being profiled to a certain extent of supporting prostitution and drug use in the area versus the Cincinnati Police Department, the Cincinnati City Council, the state, even if you will, because they painted the picture as if it was human trafficking versus, painting it on the real level that these were women who were suffering from addiction, who were trying to get their next fix and have resorted to performing sexual acts in order to achieve that mission. So it was us against them, and I felt so overwhelmed. We all did. I think initially it was kind of like, well, what do we do? You know, we open up our front door to go out and get on the public transportation to find our street barricaded. Initially, we thought, you know, is there a fire? Did a building collapse? Is there work going on? But no, we found out the day that it was going down that it had already been signed, sealed, and delivered for the next 90 days. And so we fought really hard. We organized. We fought really hard. We went before council. We had several talks with the Cincinnati Police Department. And one of their solutions was to call the police department if we needed to go to the store or to the grocery or to the doctor or wherever. They would help us coordinate with people who had cars in the area. But that was not the point. The point was that we had been infringed upon and our quality of life had been taken away from us without even asking for our opinion, let alone notifying us that it was getting ready to take place. So I guess indirectly unknowingly, we practice dialectical materialism. Would you agree?
Most definitely. Most definitely. You know, the thing is that the idea of having a problem and utilizing the available resources that you have independently, if not collectively as a community, has been how Black folk for the longest time have been able to survive in America. We didn't call it dialectical materialism, but it's actually what we were doing. We were utilizing what we have to meet the needs that we have. I always use this description of dialectical materialism to explain it to people, and it is quite simply, have you ever had a situation where you were baking a cake or something, and you look up, and you might be making Kool-Aid, and you look up, and damn it, you don't have sugar. So you go next door and borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor. That's what we're talking about. But unfortunately, when we move the discussion to the political realm, the significant realm, the economic realm, our people seem to abandon that ingenuity, that creativity, that that toughness, that doggedness that allowed them to get over for so very long and to make a way out of no way. And I yield with that.
Okay, I've gotten a message from Blog Talk Radio that there's some connection issues going on. So they're apologizing for any inconvenience. But I just wanted to let you and the listeners know, just in case there's anything that go wrong tonight, which it has and can, might. I just wanted to let the listeners and you know about the message that we received. So Dr. Jones, analyzing some of the things that we've talked about doing as the UAC, and the fact that we've got folks who are saying, and as it pertains to violence in our community, we'll just use that as an example. We've got state-inflicted violence that needs to be addressed. And then we've got horizontal violence that to be addressed. If you were to pick which one would best use dialectical materialism, how it would best get us the results that we're looking for, which two do you think that we should look at addressing first?
Okay, give me the ones you ran down real quickly again.
The state oppression, violence by the police, what happened to me in the tax department, that kind of thing, people being over-prosecuted with mass incarceration. We've got that on one side, and then we've got horizontal violence, or what folks refer to as black-on-black violence in our community, which sometimes, as we've talked about in the past, we need to look at whether these acts of violence are being initiated by need or by greed. So which one, if we were to use dialectical materialism, do you think that we should look at addressing first that would give us the best solution for the things that are happening in our community?
You know, that's a very difficult, very good question, but very difficult one to answer. I mean, I would liken it to who should we attack first? The individual with the machete who's constantly stabbing us and cutting at us, or the individual with the 45? They're both doing serious and significant damage to our body. But I think that Huey would actually say that we need to deal with the idea of black-on-black violence first. Because if we're dealing with the issue of black-on-black violence first, we're going to be able to develop a community, a solidarity amongst our people, and be able to present ourselves as a united force against police brutality and violence and what have you, and exploitation of the black community by people who are not necessarily black. In saying that, I think that for us, before we can even begin to really consider implementing dialectical materialism, we need to create this idea of love, of black love, of self-love, so that our people will be willingly ready, able, and available to implement whatever solution that we come up with. It would be a horrific occurrence if we were to go ahead and figure out logical, concrete steps that we could take to deal with the idea of the exploitation and oppression of the black community, and everyone wasn't on board to help end it. So I think that that would have to come first, that we would have to get our own house in order before we begin dealing with external things. And I yield with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't yield, because the next question is, how do we do that? And just using that example.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I wish I knew. I wish I had an answer that would allow me to say, well, yeah, this is what we need to do, X, Y, and Z. Everything starts with a person's love and image, love of themselves and love of those, you know, around them. You know, without that as the basic building block, we're in trouble. How do we get our people to love themselves? You know, it's amazing that we're more readily available emotionally, politically, socially, and economically to rally against an attack against our people, and yet sort of blasé and noncommittal. Mm-hmm. We're definitely not in a rush to build up our own. You know, there seems to be a fear that if we do pool our resources, that one person is going to end up with more, a bigger piece of the pie than another person. You know, we're looking at, you know, a case in point would be Umar Johnson's dilemma that he's dealing with right now. The conscious community is completely divided in regards to, you know, if the brother is real, if he's not, should we support him, should we not? You know, so I don't know. I don't know. We've been so damaged and we've been so hurt that even good, as far as a solution to solve our problems, is going to be viewed skeptically. And I yield with that.
Yeah. Well, we've experienced that to a certain extent, even within this group, trying to move things forward. It gets hard sometimes. I think people come in initiatives, events, movements, projects, programs, whatever, with everything that they've experienced in their lives, and then we try to bring it together, and it seems like often that's where rifts start. And you're right, you know, because we have been so hurt and so damaged, we all know that self-preservation is a natural instinct. It's probably one of the, bigger instincts that we have to survive is self-preservation. And I think that that's often the mode that we go into, which, you know, causes us to act defensively with situations and people and occurrences that if we were, I guess, a little better at analyzing things, we wouldn't continue to occur to us so much. One of the things that I heard as I was studying for this week and preparing for tonight's broadcast is the person compared the analysis of 10 people doing work individually and then coming together and combining what they've already have or what they have to something new versus all 10 of them working together to solve a particular issue or problem. And then, you know, having that energy of the 10 people combined is always going to be stronger than taking their individual efforts and then combining them later to try to get the, you know, same result or a better result. It usually works cohesively. And so I think we've done a good job of, you know, I guess working through the kinks, if you will, to still come out working cohesively as much as possible. But most certainly, we are not even fully, you know, healed, if you will, from damage and the hurt that we've suffered as a people. So I definitely agree with what you said, is that the love has got to outweigh the self-hatred and non-love that we've been conditioned to exemplify towards one another. And I yield.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that we can talk about all of these highfalutin concepts. We can talk about all of these economic plans, these political strategies, what have you. But without the basic building blocks that our ancestors taught us about love, honesty, strength, commitment, even if white folk left the planet Earth tomorrow, if all other groups left the planet Earth tomorrow, we would not be ready, prepared, or able to necessarily live harmoniously with one another. I have a sinking suspicion that our people have been around capitalists and European exploiters so much that they would attempt to go ahead and assume that role within our communities. You know, that their actions right now are predicated upon just assembling material trinkets, things that are rusting away, things that really don't matter, things that are tangible, mm-hmm. that can be created by man and thrown away by man. Yeah, we're not, you know, that's a scary thought, that even without oppression, what would our people do? You know, what mm-hmm. would we do?
Yeah, and you know, that's something that, thank you. My bag's in there, too. Oh, thank you, honey. I appreciate you. Yeah, well, my that's okay. Sorry, Dr. Jones. Sorry, listeners. Y'all get ready to go? Okay, I'll see y'all later. Nope. Here's a cute. That's my youngest, my 22-year-old baby girl. Okay, so, well, one of the things too, Dr. Jones, that I also found out is something called the three basic laws of dialectic materialism: the law of transformation of quantity. And vice versa, that was the, you know, the 10 people working together versus individually. The law of interpretation of opposites and the law of negation of the negation. Are you familiar with those three basic laws of dialectical materialism? And if so, can you talk about those a little
bit? No. The thing for me, the aspect, once again, that I dealt with dialectical materialism from is the definition that the Panthers advanced. What that sounds like is actually almost pure Marxist ideology. One of the more interesting things about Karl Marx and the idea, the quote-unquote idea of Marxism, Marx said this, it makes people laugh when they hear it, who have tried to study Marx. Marx says, I know one thing for sure, that I am not a Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a testimony to the reality that the idea of Marxism is been changed, altered, expounded upon, reduced, boiled down. There are hundreds of different versions of Marxist slash socialist slash communist. So no, that strain, no. I'm not familiar with what they're saying.
Okay. All right. That's fair. And you know, like we said earlier, you know, we're looking for redevelopment of the message, if you will, because this methodology, I think, you know, is something that we can apply to ourselves as we have in the past. It's just going to take, I guess, a 2015 version of it, whatever that is mm-hmm. going to look like.
Well, definitely. You know, you're talking about, and this is sort of why I started off with the idea of contextualizing the idea of even having a discussion on dialectical materialism. We have to talk about it in its most applicable form to African Americans in the Black struggle. We can mm-hmm. sit here and we can talk about negation of the negation and what have you all day long, but it would move Black folk no further down the road to liberation. You know, it has to be every waking thought, idea, and moment has to be predicated and aimed solely and wholly at the liberation of Black folk, and I yield.
Ashe. Ashe. We've got a brother coming on Thursday that has done just what we're talking about from an economic perspective. So for those that are listening tonight, please make sure that you join us the rest of the week, especially Thursday when this brother comes on. He spent a lot of time looking at the issues, if you will, and various things that have been formulated in the past and used in the past, and trying to do exactly that, bring it up to 2015 to where we can actually use it no matter where we are and still, you know, have our works, if you will, be a collective effort, again, no matter where we are throughout the diaspora. So please make sure that you all join us on Thursday here on Sign of the Times, and of course Friday, Brothers of the Sun. So, Dr. Jones, when I first brought up the topic of dialectical materialism, you said, "Oh, there's that word again." Do you think mm-hmm. that we are to look at ourselves and be open and honest with ourselves enough to the point where we can begin to love even our weaknesses?
No, most definitely not. You can look at even the way the treatment that the quote-unquote conscious community, the nationalists, those who should be forward-thinking in regards to our situation, how we behave towards one another. We don't even love one another usually. You know, we're steeped in a rivalry, you know. So I know that we don't have the ability to look at our weaknesses. And in actuality, I believe that when our weaknesses are apparent, we will utilize that to subdue one another instead of protecting and building one another up. We'll pick at that weakness to the point where we're able to get rid of what in many ways seems to be, through our actions and behavior towards one another, a rival. You know, look at how we together over the smallest thing. And yet those who have historically exploited our people, we're more than willing to forgive them and to hold hands with them and sing Kumbaya, even attend church with them after one of their own has come up into one of our praise houses and murdered several of our brothers and sisters. We will forgive them. But at our core, we hate and have disdain for one another usually. And I yield with that.
Well, that's part of the healing process, I guess, that needs to happen. Because we all know that we all make mistakes, and that, I guess, acknowledging what those mistakes are what's going to help us to heal, and doing what we can to make sure that whatever behavior needed to be corrected that we're at least trying to work on correcting that behavior so that that hurt or, you know, disappointment or whatever does not, you know, reappear or continue to fester into a cancer that's going to continue to divide and separate us. And I guess, you know, that's another thing that, you know, I've learned in doing this work is that, you know, it really does take effort to just let some things just go. But that in and of itself requires a certain amount of maturity, if you will, and a certain amount of willingness to make yourself vulnerable, as we said in the past, to the healing process itself. So I guess, you know, we're taking baby steps at this thing, and we're going to make mistakes in the process. But the thing is to try to first, I guess, acknowledge, you know, what exactly took place and to help each other as best we can to heal from that and to grow back to the point where we do, you know, begin to or at least try to truly love one another for who we are, not who, you know, we think that the other person or other entity or group should be.
You know, one of the most difficult things that I know for my people is to have a moment of self-reflection. I believe that it's the reason why people want a cell phone next to them at all times. They want to be texting. They want to have some distraction, some white noise. That white noise, that continual white noise, prevents God from being able to talk to you. And even our leaders do it. You know, if anyone should know the worth, the value, and utility of some meditation, some taking care of oneself, our leadership should. But we see them in as poor shape and plight as common folk. And I yield with that.
Okay. I just got a message from Starboy that he's trying to call in, but he's not getting through. So I don't know if you want to continue this dialogue or if you want to go ahead and terminate tonight's broadcast and just resume the discussion on Friday. I'll leave it up to you.
You know what? It's if people aren't able to call in, which Starboy is kind of attesting to, maybe we will rest it tonight and then pick it up on Friday.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to send out a message to everyone and let them know what took place tonight, and they can at least listen to this much of the dialogue, and maybe it'll prompt some more discussion for Friday night's broadcast. So thank you, Dr. Jones, really, truly, from the bottom of our hearts for your commitment to this process. And I know, you know, we probably should be paying you thousands and thousands of dollars for what you do for us.
I'm
but,
good.
You know, appreciate you. Because, I mean, you're doing what some folks, you know, only will do if they're getting paid. So thank you so much for your commitment. And thank you to the listeners for chiming in and calling in tonight on the World Wide Web and via telephone. We do have a few callers. Callers, please join us again on Friday when we have part two of this discussion with Brothers of the Sun. Tomorrow night we're going to have a listening session about dialectical materialism, and we're going to try to play two different descriptions, if you will, of dialectical materialism. And then Thursday, of course, as I stated before, Brother Yao is going to be joining us live and in living color on Sign of the Times. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and terminate tonight's broadcast. I apologize on behalf of Blog Talk Radio. Dr. Jones, this just gives you an opportunity to continue, you know, on your travels. I wish you a safe journey. And again, thank you so much for calling in. It's Queen Tahira signing off for Sign of the Times. We love you. We thank you. And we will see you tomorrow night. Peace.
This is why I say it's the ballot or the bullet. It's liberty or death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. America today finds herself in a unique situation. Historically, revolutions are bloody. Oh, yes, they are. They have never had a bloodless revolution or a nonviolent revolution. That don't don't happen even in Hollywood. You don't have a revolution in which you love your enemy. And you don't have a revolution in which you are begging the system of exploitation to integrate you into it. Revolutions overturn systems. Revolutions destroy systems. A revolution is bloody. But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in a position actually to become involved in a bloodless revolution. The word Russian revolution was bloody. Chinese revolution was bloody. British revolution was bloody. Cuban revolution was bloody. And there was nothing more bloody than the American revolution. But today, this country can become involved in a revolution that won't take bloodshed. All she's got to do is give the black man in this country everything that's doing. Everything. I hope that the white man can see this. Because if you don't see it, you're finished. If you don't see it, you're going to become involved in some action in which you don't have a chance. We don't care anything about your atomic bomb. It's useless. Because other countries have atomic bombs. When two or three different countries have atomic bombs, nobody can use it. So it means that the white man today is without a weapon. If you want some action, you got to come on down to earth. And there's more black people on earth than there are white people. I only got a couple more minutes. The white man can never win another war on the ground. His days of war victory, his days of background victory, oh! Can I prove it? Yes. Take all the action that's going on this earth right now that he's involved in. Tell me where he's winning. Nowhere. Why, some race farmers, some race eaters ran him out of Korea. Yes, they ran him out of Korea. Race eaters with nothing but gym shoes and a rifle and a boomerang. Took him and his tanks and his napalm and all that other action he's supposed to have. And ran across the elbow. Why? The day that he can win on the ground is past. Up in French Indochina, those little peasants, race roars, took on the might of the French army and ran all the Frenchmen. You remember Dien Bien Phu? No! The same thing happened in Algeria, in Africa. They didn't have anything but a rifle. The French had all these highly mechanized instruments of warfare, but they put some guerrilla action on. And a white